And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Poppin' Packs, a segment where I open an old pack of basketball cards with a person from the NBA industry. Today's guest is Nate Jones. Nate grew up in Los Angeles in the 80s and 90s and was a huge Lakers fan, but now as a professional, he spends his time representing players such as Damian Lillard and Jaylen Brown. Sit back and enjoy as we open a pack of 95-96 Fleers.
Here it comes, connecting. There he is, Nate Jones.
What up?
How are you, man?
What's going on? How you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I like the shades.
Yeah, thank you, man. I'm trying to be stylish out here in Atlanta. You know how it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Nate, I'm glad you joined me, especially for this one, because correct me if I'm wrong, but you grew up in Los Angeles and you were a Lakers fan as a kid. Is that right?
Yeah, diehard Lakers fan. Shaq Kerr and Magic Johnson are what got me into the sport and the love of the sport. And between his calls and Magic's electricity playing, that's what got me hyped on it. And being a basketball junkie, watching the game, playing the game, and now working in the business of the sport, it all was derived from that seed.
So were you still, a diehard Lakers fan, would you call yourself? Or?
I had to give that up. I'll give you a short story. 2008, 2009 season. When I first started this job, our largest client was Dwight Howard back when he was a big time superstar.
Yep.
Gets to the finals versus the Lakers. I mean, at that point, where's my fandom going?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was the first conflict. And then the next year they played, the Thunder in the first round, and we represented Kevin Durant. So I'm obviously pulling for the Thunder in that moment. And then they got to the finals and they played the Celtics, and we represented Nate Robinson, who had a couple of good big games in that series.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like all of my allegiance that 2 years just had to kind of woke me up to the idea that it's going to be impossible to care what happened with the Lakers with my business conflicts, you know?
That must be tough, because I know Jaylen Brown is one of your guys right now as well.
Yeah.
And the Celtics, they got beaten by the Heat, but if it was the Celtics and the Lakers in the final, I mean,
I'm pulling for the Celtics in that instance.
Right.
I'm pulling for Jaylen, no doubt about it. I mean, Dame played the Lakers in the first round. You know, Lakers fans don't a lot of them on Twitter don't realize my background in that. I was probably a bigger fan than most of them and know more about the team and the history and all of that than most of them. But it is what it is. You have to have your allegiances when you become an adult, you know?
Yeah, things change. Now I've got to ask you a question. Putting aside all of your work connections and biases here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had James Worthy on this a few weeks ago, and I asked him this question. If it was the Clippers versus the Celtics in the finals, being an LA Lakers fan growing up, Clippers and the Celtics, who would you cheer for if that was the finals?
Clippers versus Celtics? You know, honestly, I would just want to see a good series. I don't have any allegiance. Anyone that grew up in LA, there are LA Clippers fans that have been, tied into the Lakers their whole lives. I really can't understand why that way, given the way the organization was prior to Steve Ballmer acquiring the team. But LA natives, the Lakers are the thread that holds the city together. Obviously the tragedy of Kobe passing and everything like that, but that hit us all hard because he's that connector. The Lakers are that connector, and the Clippers have never been that. They just haven't. And I think that they fall into a business because they're in Los Angeles as a metropolis and they have access to, it's not hard to get 20 to 16,000 people to fall into an arena.
Yeah.
When you're in a metropolis.
Awesome. Right. Well, so what happens is I've got a pack of cards from the 95-96 Fleer season. Okay. That should be right up your alleyway.
Oh, man.
Because I know you know 90s basketball inside and out. So
yeah. I'm hopefully my mind is revved up, man. We'll see.
we'll see how you go here. Yeah. I think you'll do pretty well. I've got a feeling you do pretty well. Okay, this first guy, we've got 11 cards, by the way. This first guy, so 95-96, I guess he was probably a rookie or certainly only in his second season. And I remember him. He's playing for the Sacramento Kings here, but I remember him more on the Portland Trail Blazers and the Miami Heat.
And, Brian Grant.
Oh, wow, there you go. Wow, man, that was too easy. Yeah.
You remember? Of course. Brian Grant, he was one of the guys in the first time the Kings busted out those black and purple jerseys.
Right.
They went from the blue to the purple and black.
I think he was actually involved in the Shaq trade to Miami too, actually, wasn't he? Is that right?
He was involved in that. He was hold on one second, I'm gonna close this
yeah, man.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I didn't want the all that noise coming in. So yeah, in terms of the Shaq in Miami trade, yeah, he was a part of the deal because he was on a large contract with Miami at that time. So they got Lamar. I think they got Lamar Odom, Caron Butler, a first round pick, and Brian Grant.
Yeah,
for Shaq.
He was a big good rebounder, Brian Grant, like a big tough, almost like an old school guy like that. You know, big sort of bully on the boards.
Yeah, all right. I believe he's a. I forget which disease he's battling, but he does a lot of fundraising for that and a lot of good community work in the Portland area as well. I know he's still involved with the team heavily.
Right. Okay, this next guy, when people talk about a player who kind of surprised and made one All-Star team for his entire career, this is a guy whose name comes up a lot. I think he made it when he was on the Golden State Warriors, but he bounced around a lot of teams towards the end of his career.
Wow.
Yeah, bit of a sort of swingman guy. He rocked the headband actually too back in the day.
Well, I mean, if you're saying he's, I don't think he made it when he was on Golden State, but are you talking about Chris Gatling?
I'm talking about Chris Gatling. That's right. Yeah,
Chris Gatling made it when he was on the Dallas Mavericks.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
See, that's why I had to wonder for this, Nate. Those are the sorts of things you can add to it. I remember him. He started his career with the Warriors, but obviously went to the Mavericks and made an All-Star game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that his All-Star year was with the Mavericks, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure they'll check me and let me know.
1997, I'm pretty sure, was his was the game that he made it anyway. So wherever he was then. All right, this next guy, you definitely should get this one because he's a Laker, and he was kind of the point guard for the new Lakers after about 1999. I think he was drafted in 1993.
Nick Van Exel.
No, not Nick Van Exel, actually.
Sidell Freeman.
No. There's another lefty like Nick Van Exel, but he went to Minnesota. I think he spent a lot of his career with Minnesota.
Okay, you said point guard, so I assumed it was one of those guys, but it's Anthony Peeler.
Anthony Peeler, that is correct.
Yeah, shooting guard. Schick used to refer to him as Mr. Fourth Quarter.
Yeah.
And he had a nice bench role once Eddie Jones and Nick Van Exel were established in the backcourt. Shaq always, but you never can tell what Shaq is being honest about or not. But he says, oh, man, I had no idea that me taking a little bit extra money caused them to trade Anthony Peeler. I would have taken less if we could have kept AP. But that was like the story of the first two seasons that he was in L.A. Like, I wish I would have known they were going to get rid of Anthony Peeler. But he would have helped a ton.
He was a pretty solid player in the end, Anthony Peeler. I thought his career, I don't think he made an All-Star game, but he was a pretty consistent player for most of it.
Oh yeah, he wasn't ever an All-Star level player, but he was a solid career guy.
We're getting someone telling us here that it was as a Maverick, by the way, Chris Gatling. So good call on that one.
Yes, sir.
But we got the year right, and we got the team right. Okay, this next guy was I think he actually became a Lakers assistant probably, I don't know, five, seven years ago, something like that. But this guy was a loudmouth, sharpshooter, power or small forward, mainly for the Indiana Pacers, but then he bounced around a bit as well, went to the Minnesota Timberwolves, went to the San Antonio Spurs, and had an incredible playoff series in 1991 in the first round.
Yeah, you're talking about his battle with Larry Bird for the Pacers. Yeah. We're talking about the Rifleman, Chuck Person.
Oh, yeah. That series, man, that's honestly one of my favorite series ever, that Celtics-Pacers series.
Yeah, Larry Bird hit his chin on the floor, and I feel like he got a concussion and just didn't admit it. That was back before the concussion protocol, but he came roaring back. And I think the millennial generation, that was their introduction to Larry Bird. You know, even if they missed out on his early stuff like him, that was really his last great performance at the end of his career.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because they got killed in the next round, I think, by the Pistons. But that sort of really bought into the legend of Larry, you know, going down injured, like you say, the concussion.
Yeah.
I think the team was down when he came back in, and then he just went on a tear.
He
scored all
tear.
Those points. And there's that one where he's almost like falling out of bounds and he gets the and one. It almost goes over the corner of the backboard as well. You know, just incredible stuff. And even all things considered, I think it was Reggie Miller, actually, who missed a three with like 3 seconds to go that could have won the game for them too, because that's kind of the way the Pacers played that series, just firing away from downtown. And they nearly pulled it off the upset, but ultimately came up short. But,
I remember Chuck Person celebrate. Him and Kevin Willis were known for bobbing their head whenever they made big shots. So, like, I definitely remember that. You know.
Chuck Person, I think it was after game three when he had the, or maybe game two, he had the seven threes. He scored 39 points, and he said after the game, "I was the best player in the world, at least for a day."
that's half the battle in the NBA in the past and today. It's that mentality. You know, if you have a mentality that I'm one of the best and no one can beat me, and you put in the work and you've got that confidence based off of the work, everyone's going to have their shine. He had a really good career.
Oh yeah. 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 It was fun to watch too. You know, like, his trash.
And I like this format, what you're doing, because you're putting shine on people that, like, they were good NBA players.
Oh yeah.
You know, but they just weren't all-star, all-NBA, Hall of Fame level players. But at one point, they might have been one of the top 50 players in the world, you know, 50 to 100 players in the world.
Well, you wonder how their careers would have been different if they were in the social media era too. You know, I mean, like, that definitely helps promote some of the guys who probably wouldn't get that shine normally, you know, but now they're playing in the right era.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, this guy, so he played most famously for the Clippers, I remember. But he bounced around a little bit too. And he was one of the only guys to wear the zero, or he was the double zero in this case. And you can actually help me, because his first name is like a French-sounding name.
Yeah, it's Benoit Benjamin.
Right.
He went from the Clippers to the Seattle Sonics to the Lakers.
So did you ever call him Benoit Benjamin? Because there was a guy for the Jazz, remember, David Benoit.
Yeah.
I know sometimes me and the guys, when we're talking, we're like, was his name Benoit or was it Benoit? And I always knew him as Benoit, but it's like, maybe it's not.
Well, I had an advantage because he played in L.A. twice. So I got to hear, you know, we heard his name. He was mainly talked about as a bust, sadly. So, you know, he was talked about negatively as someone that had all this talent, but didn't really care. You know, the story you hear about big men that are, you're 7 feet tall, so you fall into basketball, but you don't really love it.
Yeah. You just kind of have to play, especially for athletic, you know. I know you've probably played pickup basketball against guys who are really tall, and they just, you know, the drive isn't there, the passion isn't there. So, you know, it's kind of like you feel sorry for those guys, I think, you know, because people kind of always just must say to them, "Oh man, you should be playing in the NBA." And you're just like, it's not that easy.
Those guys, those are the ones that usually have a ton of other interests, and basketball is just a means to an end to make money.
I know you like to play ball, but I mean, when was the last time you played a game? When was the last time you played pickup?
Honestly, man, I know we played pickup with each other. I think this is an all-star in New Orleans like a few years ago. And that was so much fun. You know, I, between the travel with work and then like I had a couple of injuries, I kind of fell off, and then I was starting to, you know, build my body up from scratch, getting back with shooting, played a couple pickup games, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
So I've kind of like just this has probably been my longest stretch of not really playing basketball ever. And yeah, I miss it a ton, man.
It's crazy because out here in Atlanta, I mean, they on the outdoor courts, they've taken down the hoops as well. Like,
yeah,
the backboards are still around, but you can't, you know, so you can't even hoop anywhere, which is sad. Yeah. But, I mean, you understand why, but man, it's crazy just how much this has taken away basketball from just people having fun playing basketball, you know, not even competition, just going out and shooting around.
Yeah, I've really been considering having Spalding send me a court for the house, for the backyard, just to shoot her. It's just coming to that point where it's a mental release too.
Oh yeah. So,
like I really like to go play basketball and talk trash with, I'm really like for the most part, really laid back, easy and everything else in my life. And on the court, I turn into a different person in terms of the way I act, the way I talk to people, everything else. And it's just a place to let loose. And some of my best friends and friendships and stuff have derived from that. Even the game we're talking about, like, I feel like there's an immediate connection with people
when
you play and everybody has fun and you kind of have that dynamic going on. There's nothing like it.
Hey, we've got a question here in the chat here. Someone's asking, what type of player do you consider yourself, a facilitator, pure scorer, or rebound monster?
At this point, I mean, I think when I played with you guys, I was probably like going to the basket a lot more and doing whatever. At this point, I tell people at pickup, like, I shoot threes, yeah. I make good passes, and I defend. That's really when I knew I got hurt, when I couldn't keep up defensively.
Right.
Like I want to take the best person and you know, focus on that. And like, if I don't score, I'm fine. But as long as I've given them a tough time, like, I'm happy with it. And that last run, I was like, okay, something really is going on. But yeah,
when you're playing and like a 20-year-old kid just comes out and crosses you up and leaves you in his dirt, it's kind of like, oh man, you know, like, I used to be that guy, but then all of a sudden, pretty quickly, you're like, all right, I'm now the old guy on the court.
Yeah, you know what though? The thing about pickup is, like, there's a lot of basic stuff that just from playing organized basketball that you pick up. Mm-hmm. That helps you a ton, even if you're playing against a talented guy. That's, unless you're injured, you just have angles and things that you do and understand. Like, whenever I play guys in the post, for instance, there's a lot of players that can't make an post entry pass.
Oh yeah,
and the guys aren't going to fight around you. So I front in the post all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and the guy can be taller than me, and the ball goes out of bounds or whatever else. Just little stuff like that. You pick up on from playing over the years, you know. Yeah. So,
you become a crafty vet. You become a crafty vet.
I got my guy Alan from over here, and he got a little old man buckets from me when we were in China on one of the Dame tours. I see he's commenting saying I got Paul Pierce game. Yeah, that's he's like 10, 15 years younger than me, and he challenged me, and I had to give him a little work. So I'm glad you're in here admitting that, man.
Yeah, Paul Pierce is a funny one because I didn't like him as a player, but I respected how his game evolved. Great footwork, you know, his ability to hit game winners. He never shied away from the moment, and he killed the Raptors a couple of times. But I just didn't like him. You know, there's some players you just don't like, but you can respect a guy without liking him. So that's where he was.
I loved Paul Pierce as a player. I thought he was a big game player. I think that he... Fundamentally, he just showed you that. I mean, they call it the Paul Pierce series when he's at that bot. He's at the free throw line extended.
Oh yeah,
and he's just jab step, pull up. You know, like, everything is out of that triple threat jab step, and he's got a million different moves to kill you. And you're like, he doesn't even look that fast.
But yeah,
he just has a mastery of all the fundamentals. But I wish he would just stop being a hater in media. I know that we're in the age of the troll and you know, he's probably takes. He's got to take his side and everything, but man,
yeah.
It's like you can tell he's he's mad that LeBron and those guys came together and took away his his potential to win another championship.
Yeah,
because they probably would have made the finals again if Bron and those guys didn't get together. Anything that is Miami Heat, LeBron James related, he's feeling a sort of way about it.
Yeah, I know.
We'll be back with more of Poppin' Packs with Nate Jones right after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right. Okay, this next guy. When you think of trios in the early 90s, everyone sort of first thinks of Run TMC. But this other team had a trio, but it sort of more started around the mid-90s. Although this guy, I believe, was probably the most hyped up and probably the most talented when he was there. I think he was there first, too. But he didn't really stay
You're talking about the Dallas Mavericks. Which one of the three Jays?
Yeah. So I said, I think he was the most talented.
He was the first?
Yeah, he was the first
or the most talented?
Well, I think he was there first because he was drafted in 92, I believe.
Okay, so the first out of the three Jays was Jimmy Jackson.
I
disagree with you that he was the most talented, though.
What was he the most hyped up though? Do you think?
Oh no way! Jason Kidd was way hyped up.
Oh yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Jason Kidd was in college, was the man. So
yeah.
I think he was the third most talented. Even though I respect his game, I think if he would have got on a good team and been like fourth, fifth guy, he would have been way more well known throughout his career. By the time he got to the Lakers, I think he was a little washed up at that point. Jimmy Jackson, Jamal Mashburn, and Jason Kidd. I have it on good sources that the rumor of them fighting with each other over Tony Braxton is 100% false.
Don't tell me that.
But you know, it's a good story. It's a good urban rumor. Urban legend, excuse me.
I mean, it's one of those what could have been, though, really. Because obviously, you know, Kidd's in. Well, is he in the Hall of Fame already? I think he is. Jamal.
Yeah, Kidd's in the Hall of Fame. The other two won't make the Hall of Fame.
But Jamal Mashburn was awesome as well. Just one of those things that just didn't quite work out for those guys. But I remember the hype around them anyway, like. The three Jays, they're gonna sort of run the 90s.
I think that they were a little early because it's difficult to win in that era, especially as it was about the bigs at that point.
Right.
You know, Jordan stood out, but at the end of the day, you had outside of the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls had Horace Grant, and then they had three-headed monster at one point. They had Rodman rebounding and being an enforcer and playing bigger than he actually was. But outside of them, everything was about bigs. If you didn't have a center, or a power forward that was basically a center, you weren't going to win. You see the teams like the Pacers, you either are the Knicks and you had Patrick Ewing, or you were Spurs and you had David Robinson, or, you know, the Rockets with Olajuwon, Alonzo, or you were like the Pacers that had, they had Derek McKee, who was a 6'10", 6'11", small forward who definitely would have played power forward and maybe some center today. They had Rick Smits, you know, they had both Antonio and Dale Davis. So they were, they just had basically four 7-footers, you know, which is, Yeah. Which is wild, you know.
I still remember that 2000 finals, the Lakers and the Pacers, and Dale Davis, you know, like his shoulders and his traps were just so big, and he basically jumped all over Shaq as often as he could. But, you know, Shaq was in his physical prime then, and just guys just bounced off him. And, it's incredible when you look at those teams, how many big guys they threw at Shaq, but it just didn't matter in the end, you know.
Yeah.
But, good, solid, tough guys just playing in the wrong era in that sense, you know.
100%.
You know, but that's the way it goes if you play at those times. And, when you think about Shaq, just the beating that he took, And again, just completely dominated those guys inside. That series against Indiana is a crazy series. It was a fun series too.
It was competitive. Yeah. It for sure was a competitive. You had some Glenn Rice drama in the middle of the series. Him complaining about not getting touches.
Yeah.
I think his wife at the time became a news story because she was complaining publicly about it as well.
Because he got traded after that season, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a part of the infamous Patrick Ewing, Horace Grant trade that I think it was a three-way deal. So you had Patrick Ewing go to Seattle,
right?
Yeah, Horace Grant go from Seattle to the Lakers. And you had Glenn Rice go to the Knicks.
Yeah, but Glenn Rice was the third leading scorer on that Lakers team too, I believe.
Yeah, he was. And the funny thing is, the Lakers had an opportunity. I think if Phil Jackson had remained the coach, they never would have. Had been a coach a year earlier,
right.
They never would have traded Eddie Jones.
Right.
But, you know, they couldn't figure it out at that time. But they wouldn't have needed a traditional point guard under his system.
Yeah.
They would have had Kobe and Eddie Jones as their starting backcourt, which would have been crazy. And then they would have filled in at the small forward spot. And they could have played defense in the style that he liked to play. Rice wasn't a Phil Jackson player to me because he wasn't going to be able to play the versatile defense. He wasn't really known as a defender. He's a scorer, post guy, and they made that trade because Shaq was always wanting someone to play off of him and hit three-pointers off of the double team, and Rice at that point was incredible. I think they got him right when he was in his prime, and then after that, they decided to move on.
Yeah.
Jerry Buss didn't want to keep contracts on for a long time. I think they had a chance to get Scottie Pippen, too, and Phil Jackson was was passionate about having that happen, and Jerry Buss passed on it too, just because of the financial aspect of it. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, that's right. He just signed that big deal after the '98 championship, I guess. So
yeah, he went to the Rockets.
Yeah,
it didn't work out with them, so he was ready to get traded, and the Blazers got him instead of the Lakers. I was really upset about that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, funny this next guy, because you just talked about him. I think he started his career wearing number 25, but then he went to number 6.
Eddie Jones.
He was kind of Kobe before Kobe, really. I mean, in terms of the highlight reels and the athleticism and the star for the Lakers. But ultimately, him and Kobe kind of overlapped a little bit too.
Yeah, I would say. Number one, I think he was Kobe's best friend on the team to start. I remember an Inside Stuff episode with Ahmad and those guys hanging out and them going through their routines and all that stuff. And then number two, I think that people outside of Los Angeles don't realize how popular he was.
Yeah.
He was more popular than Kobe when Kobe first came to the Lakers. So they chanted the guy's name throughout the game. It was the Eddie chance was a thing. Every time he made a big play, he was really loved here. He came up short a couple times in the playoffs, and they ended up moving him with Eldon Campbell for Glenn Rice. But man, I always wonder what that Laker team would have been like if they could have kept Eddie, especially because Phil's philosophy was different, if they could have kept Eddie Jones and Kobe together.
He was really popular everywhere he played, from what I remember. You know, Miami, they loved him down there. Charlotte, they loved him. Even Memphis at the end of his career, they kind of loved him there too. So, you know, from what you're saying, just, you know, one of those fan favorites everywhere he went.
Yeah, he made, I mean, highlight plays, and then he made effort on defense. Like, yeah. Fans really love guys that go balls out on defense, and he was one of those guys. So you're gonna have love when you have hustle plays, you know.
I don't know if it's the NBA official account, but on YouTube there is a 5-minute compilation of Eddie Jones. Maybe it's House of Highlights, someone like that who's got it. And it is one of the best compilations, you know, because of the athleticism and the dunks. And he dunks over Sean Bradley, I think it is, at one point.
I still remember that. I still remember watching that game live and losing his mind. Him and Sue Lance, they loved Eddie. And they were going crazy. And then Shaq's first year, he did the same thing in Milwaukee. I think he took off almost from the free throw line and dunked on someone, and Schick, we almost lost Schick there. Like, he was so excited about it. But he was definitely a staple that we all loved in LA.
All right, this next guy is another guy who I think only made one All-Star game, and I think it was actually probably 97 as well. He was a point guard out of Cleveland. Injuries kind of ended his career, though, a bit early. Good player. Actually, his numbers weren't as big as I remember, but just a one-time All-Star.
If you're talking about, he was a good player, point guard, played for Cleveland, he probably played for Minnesota, he probably played for, I forget what the other, Milwaukee.
I think that's right, yeah.
Terrell, and he's from Portland, Terrell Brandon.
Oh, there you go, Terrell Brandon,
yeah. I believe he still has a popular barbershop in Portland.
Oh, is that right?
Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, good player, very athletic, very quick, but injuries kind of ended it pretty quickly for him, I think, really. I mean, certainly from being a star player anyway, you know, it happens to a lot of guys, but he was pretty electric in his early days.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about, and we'll probably be saying the same thing about our generation or the current generation in the future, but the sad thing about guys that played in the 90s, I think if we had some of the technology and philosophy around body maintenance and health and wellness and sleep and everything else that they try to do with these guys now, they would have lasted a lot longer. It's what it is.
That's right. Okay, this next guy. Now, this guy is famous because he never made an All-Star game, but he's one of those guys that people first talk about who should have made an All-Star game. I think he led the league in assists one year. Started his career in New York, and then he went to San Antonio. He's playing for the Blazers here in 95-96. He played for the Washington Bullets as well.
Yeah, of course. This is a very easy one. As former Kentucky assistant coach Rod Strickland.
There make you
him
go.
Make him jump like Rod Strickland.
Yeah. Kyrie Irving's godfather, isn't he, I think?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I mean, that's funny that you bring that up, though, too, because I've made that point a few times. When you watch Kyrie and the way he is around the basket, it's a lot like Rod.
Yeah.
I don't think Rod had the handles and moves with the off the bounce that the Kyrie has today, but all those moves around the basket, all those creative layups that he has, left hand, right hand, totally remind me of Rod Strickland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I didn't really notice that until someone brought it up. And then you look back at old Rod Strickland highlights, and, you see those kisses off the glass that Kyrie does. And I'm sure he watched him and tried to mimic him as well. I don't know if you remember this. One of the first times Rod Strickland was really brought into the spotlight was the 1990 Western Conference Finals. I think it was Game 7. And he does the pass over the back of his head, looking for Sean Elliott, I think it is, and they miss it, and basically the Blazers go on to win go to the finals from there. And Rod's kind of given was called like the scapegoat almost, because he made this crazy pass and it didn't come off and his team lost. But
so that year, so you're talking 92,
I think it was 1990, I think, wasn't it? The first
I was trying to think of the 2 years the Blazers made the finals. So you're talking about 90 and 92. So they probably, I think that the Blazers played the Suns in the conference finals. So that was probably the second round.
Right.
Because he got Magic Johnson and the Lakers got their ass, they had the best record in the league. They got their ass kicked by KJ. They couldn't handle the pick and roll second round. And then KJ and those guys, they thought the Suns were going to go to the finals and they beat the Blazers beat them. Yeah. So I'm assuming that was the second round. I don't remember off the top of my head like that. So
you might be right actually there. Yeah. But, that was a crazy series for the Lakers because they had such a good season that season.
They got swept.
But I think they won game two of that series against the Suns, I think. I'm pretty sure it went to five games because they got killed in game one and then they killed them in game two. But then,
they definitely got beat. They had the best record in the league.
Yeah.
And this is what's always funny to me, though, too, is like people talk about like the Lakers, like they just fell off when Kareem retired. And I'm of the belief that if nothing happens to Magic, that they'll continue on being in the mix for the, I don't think anyone was beating the Bulls, but they at least would have been in the mix for the title runs for years to come. I totally believe that Charles Barkley would have ended up on the Lakers if Magic didn't retire.
Yeah, well, didn't Charles say that he thought he was traded there? He was kind of telling people, like, I'm going to the Lakers.
He did after Magic retired, and then it kind of fell through. But I think the Lakers would have been more willing to throw in a lot more to pair those two together. And now you're talking – I mean, this is, you know, obviously it's major hypothetical, but now you're talking – Magic and Sir Charles maybe having one or two finals against against Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. I mean, I think those would have been classics. Or even the conference finals with the Blazers. If it would have came back the next year, we got Blazers and Lakers for a rematch. There was a ton of things. It's also interesting, before the Barkley trade, I remember after the Suns beat the Lakers in 1990, and I got back when Sporting News was a thing.
I got
a Sporting News preview as a kid, and they had the Suns as the team of the 90s. They were predicting the Suns before they had Barkley. Like, they were just like Tom Chambers, KJ, Xavier McDaniel, like all these guys they had back then, that they were going to be the team of the 90s. And Hornacek, I forgot about Hornacek was on that team. Marley, all those guys. They were going to be the team of the 90s. And then the next year, the Lakers get to the finals and beat the Blazers. And then the next year, the Blazers get to the finals. So until the Barkley trade, they were kind of underachieving in that regard.
Well, and they almost blew it completely in 93, too. I mean, they made the finals, but they were down 2-0 at home to the Lakers, the 1-8 seed. And that would have just been one of the biggest upsets of all time if that had happened, because I think James Worthy, now you probably know this better than me, but was James Worthy coming off the bench at that point?
Yeah, he was coming off the bench at that point because they had let's see, for 93
the Dale three and,
trying to think, it AC definitely started. I don't remember if Worthy. I'm pretty sure Worthy came off the bench in that series.
Yeah,
and it's Worthy had one of the fastest drop offs ever. Like he was an All Star in '92, the first year that Magic missed, and then '93 it was like he had his bench role, or part time starter, part time bench role, and then '94 he barely played.
Yeah,
and then he came back for the '95. Training camp and was like, I can't go. It's like that was his 13th year.
Yeah,
that's what I talk about with players, with the medical staff and travel and everything else versus now, like a guy like him plays 20 years. You know?
Well, I guess one thing with that though is I guess he played finals
a lot.
Yeah, like seven times in those 13 seasons, and then other times he made the conference finals. So 13 seasons doesn't sound all that many, but he probably ended up playing the equivalent of 16 or 17, with just all those playoff games as well.
Which is incredible about when you think about Magic and him taking 5 years off between the HIV diagnosis and coming back in 96 and still being like at 36 years old after missing 5 years and still being good. Like, it wasn't one of the best players in the league, but he was still really good. Like at that point you would just think like, there's no way. And Kareem as well, you know, like Kareem played 20 years and how many finals did he go? And, you know, Magic went to 9 and 12 years. I think Kareem ended up with 8 over that, that period. It was basically like 8 and 10 years. So that's a lot. That's a lot of basketball, man.
Someone here's telling us that that Lakers starting lineup, I'm guessing is from 93, was Nick Van Exel.
Lade. Lynch. Okay, got you.
Yeah,
and then
Doug Christie, Anthony Pele. Yeah, so, and that was Randy Fund, I think, was the coach too at the time.
Randy Fund was the 93 coach.
Yeah.
And then he lasted another half season and Magic Johnson took over. And then, but Nick wasn't on that 92-93 team, man. You're thinking of 93-94.
Yeah, because
Nick was drafted.
Yeah.
Sedale was the starter. It was just a matter of if and Lynch was a first round pick in 93-94. For 93. But Christie and Peeler were on the team for sure. They were on the bench. I remember that series. They kept fist pounding each other on the sideline.
That was crazy. And because Paul Westphal, of course, is the one who says we're going to win the series. You know, I mean, of course, he's going to say that. Like, he's not going to say we're going to lose it. But then they do come back, first team ever to come back after losing first two at home. Anyway, in a best of five series.
Yeah, and then the next season, the Sonics had the same thing happen to them.
Yeah,
I feel like you might see a little bit more of that if we had. Basically, with a 7-game series, you feel like the best team always wins unless there's some major injury or whatever. With a 5-game series, there's that chance that you know, an upset can happen, and we saw a lot of that in that time period.
I had George Karl on this, you know, saying, you know, 2 months ago or something like that, and talked to him about it. And he's got a sense of humor about it now. But I think they won 64 games that season. And he's like, man, Dikembe was too good. He said Robert Pack, I think it was in game 5, won that game for them too, coming off the bench, which is something that he just, you know, like just
if a guy,
the guy just has a hot game and he's playing well, it's like sometimes there's not much you can do about it. So, you know,
it's, it's interesting. It definitely was a deep team, but it's another of those examples of the 90s where if you didn't have a center, you know, except for the Bulls were kind of the exception because they had MJ. But if you didn't have a center, you weren't really in play. Like the Sonics ran into Dikembe and they had nobody that can combat him. Sean Kemp was a power forward, but he wasn't really. He wasn't really a rim protector, traditional rim protector, big that's going to get every single rebound, block every shot, all of that. That was so important in the 90s, and Denver had that. They had a lot of size and a lot of versatility, and, yeah, man, that was a fun series to watch. I was mad, though, because I didn't enjoy Utah versus Denver, and I didn't enjoy the Rockets versus Utah. Right. I would have rather had Seattle – beat, you know, the Jazz versus the Sonics would have been an incredible series. I'm pretty sure Hakeem would have destroyed the Rockets, but still, destroyed the Sonics, but still would have been good to see that series.
We'll be back with more of Poppin' Packs with Nate Jones right after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, this next one. Now, this guy was a big college player, and he was actually, so one of the most famous upsets of all time happened in 1992, but it was a game that didn't really happen because it happened out in Monaco. And this guy was the point guard for the team that upset the Dream Team, the only time the Dream Team ever lost. And this guy was, did it happen in Monaco? Where did it happen? I can't remember, but anyway, it's famous because the only time the Dream Team, the original Dream Team, lost was the very first game I think they played against a bunch of college kids, and this guy was the point guard for that team. He was a big college player out of Duke. He didn't really have a big, strong NBA career, which wasn't a shock because he was.
I'm assuming it's Bobby Hurley, but
that's
maybe
it. There you go.
Yeah, Bobby Hurley, I think, didn't he get in a car accident his rookie year or second year that kind of threw off his NBA career a little bit?
Not sure.
I'm telling you, look it up. I'm pretty sure that's what happened to him.
Right. Yeah, he, but yeah, that famous loss, you know, Bobby Hurley and Chris Webber, I think it was, who basically just gave it to the Dream Team, whether or not it was Chuck Daly throwing that game or not, but he's kind of, you know, I mean, it's a badge of honor for him anyway, you know, to be on that team.
Yeah, it's that's part of the lore of the team. I think that getting that competitive juices going, you know, getting that fire going, and they did a great job. I think Chuck Daly did a great job with that. Dream Team was awesome.
Oh yeah.
I wish that it would have happened a little bit earlier, so we could have seen Larry Bird at that point, you know, really be Larry Bird. But, you know, it still was fun to see. I think seeing that Michael have to fight Magic for the best player in the world crown, I think that was as well worth it. A lot of people don't realize how good Magic Johnson was because he was, I mean, he played 1 year under NBA on NBC. But so we really missed this. He missed that. He was the reason basketball exploded.
Yeah,
and got to the point that MJ could take it to the next stratosphere, right? Like, but we don't really – people don't hear how good he actually was. You know, they think about him as, oh, yeah, he was an assist guy. No, the guys hit so many big game shots, big game winners. He could do everything.
Yeah.
But it's just not really talked about. So I try to give every opportunity that I have to highlight him.
Is he your favorite player ever?
The reason I love basketball. I think Steph is not in terms of my favorite player, but in terms of that, the joy that he plays with, that feeling, that electricity. Like Michael was great, but he just was a killer. You know, the ad industry did a good job building that Michael Jordan persona.
Yeah,
but Magic actually had that, like, he was killing you and smiling and hooking everybody else up on the team to kill you, you know, he didn't have to score. He didn't have to score 20 in order to do that. So,
yeah. I mean, if you were to make a movie about the Showtime Lakers, you know, you would cast the character like Magic Johnson. He's got the name, he's got the pizzazz, he's got the, you know, the highlights. He was built for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh man, he was the perfect ambassador for the league. Honestly, like I said, I wish we would have got a few more years of him with under NBA on NBC and Dick Ebersol and everything else in terms of that. So, yeah.
All right, last one here, Nate. You've done pretty well. You should be able to get this one too, because this guy was a big hyped up draft pick out of Syracuse, and he kind of was the one who
I have a feeling. Before you even get to it, if he's hyped up, are you talking about Derek Coleman or
no? Oh no, not Derek Coleman. Okay. This guy was basically the reason the Run TMC guys split up. Don Nelson wanted a bigger guy out there than Mitch Richmond.
Oh, you're talking about Billy Owens.
Yeah, big Billy Owens, yeah.
Billy Owens, yeah, that's It's interesting. Billy Owens was he was a better player than this, but he almost was like, and it of course it involves Nelly again, but he almost was like the Anthony Randolph of his time in terms right. of the way that Nelly was thinking about him, right? Like,
yeah,
like he just was that guy that like could be the point forward. Nelly loved those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys. I mean, and he had the same issue in New York because he fell in love with Anthony Mason.
Yeah.
And Nelly tried to put the ball in Anthony Mason's hands, and Ewing was still there, and that wasn't going to work. So that's how he ended up with Jeff Van Gundy as the coach. Sorry, I have a little puppy here that's
you're right. Yeah.
trying to take over.
Yeah,
making her live stream debut.
Yeah. What's her name?
Her name is Cashew, a.k.a. Cash.
She's the color of a cashew, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. My other dog is named Peanut, so we had to keep it in that family.
Hey, pretty good pack you had there, Nate. We had Billy, Bobby Hurley, Strickland, Terrell Brannan, Eddie Jones, Jim Jackson, Benoit Benjamin, Chuck Person, Peeler, Chris Gatling, and Brian Grant. So trip down memory lane for you anyway for these guys.
Oh, yeah, man. I love, as you know, I love basketball. I wish that we could – I mean, well, we got to get this show bought on a bigger, like, platform outside of IG Live. I'll come on there and I'll challenge – when it comes to 90s stuff, stump Nate Jones.
Yeah, like, that's what I was going to say. What's that? Stump the Schwab.
Stump the Schwab. Yeah, stump me. I mean, other sports I'm not going to be able to know, but if it comes to 90s basketball, I know everybody.
I'm going to have to get you and Ariel Helwani on and have some sort of a trivia show. Ooh, because
let's do that.
Ariel, when I did this with Ariel back in, again, a couple of months ago, he had so much fun. He's like, give me another pack. Yeah. So we opened two packs, and he's a big Knicks fan. And, he knew, like, some crazy stuff. I mean, I know he's a basketball guy, but that's his sort of secondary career there, but he knows so much about the league. So you and him would have a great battle. We'll try to figure something out and try to get that.
I'm about to hit him up and see if he wants to start a basketball podcast. Let's do it.
Yeah,
I'm with it.
Oh man, he would be into that for sure. But
yeah, man, I would do the same in terms of opening another pack if I didn't have a 2 o'clock call. So
no worries,
2 p.m. West Coast call, but. I appreciate you, my man.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Nate. This is a whole lot of fun, and I'll get you on again at some point. And it was great talking to you. And
likewise, my man.
You think the Lakers wrap it up tomorrow, or where? Tomorrow night.
I think the odds are in favor of that, but Jimmy Butler is a different beast. He's not going to just go out easily, but the combination of LeBron and Anthony Davis is so tough. LeBron is still incredible at his age and experience. It really surprising, honestly. I thought he'd be falling off a little bit by this point. It'll be interesting to see if we ever see a real drop off from him. Is he gonna play 20 years with no drop off? Absolutely insane, right?
Yeah,
like to think about.
No.
And then Anthony Davis, who we knew was an incredible player, and now he's got the best playmaker in the league setting him up. Like that's incredible. And then Anthony Davis on the other end has woke LeBron up on defense.
Yeah.
You know, like he made LeBron between I think Anthony Davis and their head coach's approach to playing defense, it's trickled down to everyone, including LeBron, and they're all locked in defensively. Even if they don't play well offensively, they always have a shot to win just because they're committed to defense from the jump. And it's nice to see. Miami probably just needs they need another player. They're a player away, but I think they have a lot of flexibility to be able to really build. So I think the East is going to be a beast for a while. I think the NBA is in good hands.
Oh, yeah. So. I agree. I think there's, again, the Celtics are another good team. The Nuggets surprised. I mean, there's some teams that just need one or two little tweaks here and there, a little bit of luck, and could be them in the finals, you know? So.
Yep.
All right, Nate. Well, thanks again for your time, man.
Thanks, my man. Have a good one.
We'll be right back.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.